Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 We're live. Every minute of our lives, John Pollock and Waiting. And here we are to go through Friday Night SmackDown in Cleveland, Ohio, which ended up turning into at least a portion of a big tribute to Hulk Hogan, who passed away on Thursday. And wait, I guess, what was your thought going into this show of how this was going to be handled? Because when we spoke on Thursday, you seemed more on like the skeptical side of like how far they would go. I was leaning toward, like, I thought they were going to be, you know, almost like rejigging the entire show to make it Hogan themed. It was largely contained to the first 15 minutes of the show. And then, you know, a couple of videos throughout the night, mentions by Joe Tessitore throughout, but it was largely contained to the front 15 minutes of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think when we spoke, I think my mind was still very much at, the sort of point of just considering how much WWE had acknowledged Hogan since that Netflix debut, which was very little. If you remember, like, there were instances where they would air the Saturday night's main event promo with Hogan on it, and that would receive vocal, like, negative reaction in certain places, and eventually they just stopped. I mean, there was a whole mysterious thing of, like, you know, Hogan not being at the Saturday night's main event that he happened to be in those commercials for, that we later found out was like a wedding that I guess he didn't know about for his son, and wasn't built for subsequent, you know, events. And that maybe could have been due to his health, you know, for all we know. We don't know at this point. But it was with all of that where I just, you know, wondered if he was still some form of, like, I guess somewhat taboo, you know, topic for them to touch on. And I think seeing the type of response, you know, the world has given this news, probably, if not already, like, themselves, probably, like, gave them more than enough sort of confidence that they should really, or they are expected to, you know, do a larger scale tribute for somebody who is completely tied to their history in so many ways, right? So I think going into the show, I was certainly expecting, like, basically everything that we saw, you know, like little videos going in and out of commercial, 10 bell salute, like really touchy video package. So it kind of became as much as I was expecting, maybe even an expectation for more, which I guess didn't necessarily happen, but we did get a lot. Yeah.
Just given the divisiveness of Terry Bollea in this, you know, period of the last couple of days, was there any thought in your mind that there would be any kind of negative reaction from any of the crowd?
No, not at all. I think it's, you know,
do you think if you were WWE, is that in the back of your mind at all? I mean, yes, this is, you know, a very different circumstance from his last appearance, but is there any of that thought? Because online you would see, like, it's all over the place. And is this is there any opening for us where you might get, like, just a, you know, 10% of your audience that is going to vocalize their you know, rejection of this figure?
I think they would expect it online, sure, but I think it in building, I just given the setting, like, this was essentially like a funeral service for a man, and you'd have to be a pretty heartless person to boo at a funeral service for anybody, no matter how you felt, you know? So I think that would only reflect poorly upon, like, anybody who would have chosen to do that. And I mean, I don't even know if they were necessarily considering it, but I think I would suggest that they were probably, you know, confident enough that they could proceed without any sort of controversy. Yeah.
So let's just get right into the show. The WrestleTix number was 9200. They're at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, and the whole, at least what we assume to be pretty much everyone of the locker room, is out on the ramp, and they do the 10 bell salute. Paul Levesque is kind of leading the portion here, and you could spot Jerry Briscoe, Jimmy Hart, Jim Duggan, Brian Blair, Sergeant Slaughter, and Chance of Hogan. And Levesque calls him one of the most recognizable global icons, and they would not be standing here without him. And they go into this video package, and this was much more than a lot of the video packages that they've done, and not even so much just like the length to it. It was like a longer video, but it was also like this mini biography of Hulk Hogan, of Terry Bollea, going to like his upbringing. We got a shot of him as Super Destroyer, that he was his first like gimmick in wrestling when he started in Florida under a mask. The Shea Stadium match with Andre, going on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, Rocky Three Shots, winning the title, all of the crossover, mainstream crossover appearances that he would make, and kind of going through just chapters of his career, various feuds, WCW, NWO, the match with The Rock, going into the Hall of Fame, and stating how he never left the spotlight, even after wrestling. They showed him being honored at Madison Square Garden, and then passing away on Thursday, and we did get no audio attached to this one. There was music over it, but of Hulk Hogan's last appearance at the Intuit Dome and cupping his ear to the crowd. And at the end, they had pulled a soundbite from Gene Okerlund stating, "Gone but not forgotten, the incredible Hulk Hogan."
Yeah, and also very importantly, this was Paul Levesque doing the voiceover.
Yes, yeah, good point. Yeah, this was Paul Levesque narrating this whole video as well.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think at this point, like, maybe we want to talk about that first, is, you know, just the, when Levesque chooses to perhaps be showcased in these sort of things. You know, we see it, like, with the introduction to the Raw Netflix premiere. You know, any major show, he'll come out and do his opening address. I mean, in these sort of situations, usually they would just get like their movie voice guy. Well, what was the decision behind putting Levesque behind it? I mean, maybe, you know, partially it's to show that a more personal touch. Maybe he was directly involved in the writing of this entire video. That could very well be the case as well. But I do find it interesting, you know, when it's Levesque. Maybe it shows that, hey, like, this one is personal, you know. I'm going to handle it, and I'm going to provide the voice for this video. As always, video is a very powerful medium, and the WWE has one of the world's best crews when it comes to these sort of pieces. This was a very touching video that did a great job just focusing on the highlights of this man's career in a short amount of time, and gave you a very emotional climax towards the end, and you know, offered, I think, the intended very sort of sentimental, nice effect that I think it was going for.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is, for all the discussion that is going to continue about Terry Bollea, like, this is a show that is designed for the fans that want to celebrate Hulk Hogan. Like, that's what this is absolutely going to be. And I think it was very interesting, because we had, you know, interesting language that was used in several instances. We had Joe Tessitore right after this video stating, "It's hard to sum up a complex man's life, but calls him as transformational as any star in the modern era of sports, likening him to Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, Michael Jordan, and a prime Tiger Woods," as Wade Barrett calls him the single most important wrestler in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot to even just dissect on in those, like, very sort of like what could be interpreted as like very sort of superficial, like, words, right? But there is a lot of dancing around and being careful that I think you have to, you know, be in order to even just say some of those lines, because this is a sensitive
subject. Tonight's words were complex and complicated. That's what we used.
Yeah, yeah. But any lies in those statements?
Ollie is over. Like, I don't put Hulk Hogan at the cultural level of a Muhammad Ali. It was interesting
so how do we even quantify that?
When Muhammad Ali died, it was even bigger than this. I mean, Muhammad Ali was a figure that was just, I mean,
but are we just grading based off of like reaction to death or
no, like, we're talking about
Tessitore was explaining about like how somebody might have transformed the sport that they were a part of.
Yeah, like I would still say if the comparison of Ali to boxing as Hulk Hogan to pro wrestling, I would disagree.
Okay,
with that.
What about Jordan, Tyson, and who else did he mention here?
Tyson to me is a
Woods.
Is Tiger Woods. He also said a prime Tiger Woods, not these last, you know, the last run of Tiger Woods, prime Tiger Woods, 97. Nike swoosh, that Tiger Woods.
I guess for a wrestling commentator, I didn't find it so egregious. Like, I mean, you know, we're used to just crazy statements from our wrestling commentators. So the point is like, okay, I guess
here's the answer that everyone is going to like jump on me. I cannot tell you that there is any person that could have been put in the Hulk Hogan role. And I've said this over and over the last 2 days. Like, I don't think that there is another individual you could have put in that spot that would have brought you the same results that Terry Bollea did in that position. His importance cannot be, it cannot be diminished in any way. Cause I do not think that they have this same success if it's Jimmy Snuka or if it's, you know, pick your person, like a Kerry Von Erich, for instance. Like, I don't know who even the candidate is, but I think for many reasons it would not have succeeded. And if you don't have a Hulk Hogan, like, where is WWF? Does the first WrestleMania succeed? There's it's a totally different industry without him.
Yeah, I think what you're stating is okay. It's your opinion, but you're a very informed person giving their opinion. So I almost look at it as like fact.
My opinion that Muhammad Ali was a much bigger iconic figure than Hulk Hogan. Yes, okay, I will stand by that one.
Okay, forget it. Like, forget even just this sidetrack, okay? Like, we were talking, like, my whole point is on this episode, okay, the line is, he was an important professional wrestler. He transformed this company, and this company wouldn't exist without him.
That's not big enough, Way. I need more.
Okay, but like, I think you can feel confident enough in stating that as a fact, right? Like, even like, is that the type of statement you can make that can feel like you are celebrating somebody for this the purposes of this tribute show while avoiding criticism for praising him too much? Like, if you're stating fact, is that still necessarily being ignorant of the terrible things he said in the past?
No, I'm not. I'm not like, listen, for anyone that just wants to just completely limit Hulk Hogan to the bad, like, I don't agree with that either. Like, you can't just ignore the impact this guy had. That's the whole reason that there is this discussion, because it's not as clear cut. If this was just random wrestler that got caught using horrific language, he wouldn't be acknowledged. But it's Hulk Hogan, who is one of the biggest stars in the history of this industry, that you can make a meaningful discussion that without, it's a very different landscape without. But you have to, I think you have to attach both. But to diminish like the what this guy was able to do, that a 1% of people that have been in this industry have done at the same level. I mean, like, that's the level of what we're talking about. We're talking about somebody of the level that above a Hulk Hogan, you're limited to like a Santo, an Antonio Inoki. Like, it's a very, very small class of people that are this level of draw and influential figure in pro wrestling.
So yes, and this was a show that does not diminish it. In fact, it's all it focuses on is, you know, this man's accomplishments.
And I think anyone tuning in thinking any differently would be just like, yeah. This was not going to be the outlet to break down the positive and negative of Terry Bollea. That's not happening on Friday Night SmackDown 2 days after his death. That's not happening 2 years after Hulk Hogan's death.
Right. And again, like this feels as close as something you can get to a public funeral service for somebody. And I certainly would not be expecting, you know, that sort of introspection. But you did get the word complicated several times, at the very least acknowledging that there is a dark side to it all.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't that. I mean, I'm certain that the people delivering these messages understand, like, their own, they're conflicted about this too. So we'll continue on.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
At this point, it's kind of like the Hulk Hogan portion ends, and then the show kind of starts around 8:15 with Logan Paul coming out for Impulsive TV here in his hometown, where he is booed, but rails on Cleveland because I made it out of here, you didn't. And he welcomes out the Kentucky Fried Convict, Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll comes out, and he explains why he's doing this at SummerSlam. All Logan Paul has done is inspire asshole kids filming themselves being assholes. And I'm more Cleveland than you. Jelly Roll says, I'm going to put you in a body bag. You've never had to struggle in life, Logan. You were a silver spoon kid, while I'm representing every poor kid that got picked on by jocks like you. And I bring light to this ring. You're just a punk ass bitch. What did you think of Jelly Roll?
I think he did really well. I think they both did really well. I mean, I felt this was a better talking segment. Like, it felt more polished of a talking segment than most of what you'll find on NXT, you know, and for guys doing it part-time who also bring with them a great deal of mainstream attention, I don't know if you could ask for more.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say he's doing this part-time. He's doing this one time. I mean, this is, he counted himself well here in the promo delivery. Drew McIntyre shows up and everyone's chanting for Orton, probably because they just saw him 5 minutes ago. They know he's here. And Jelly Roll starts singing his theme as Randy arrives to a gigantic pop. They get into a fight and Orton is sent to the floor and they double team Jelly Roll. But Orton yanks Drew to the floor and Jelly Roll fights back against Logan, hits two shoulder tackles, which might be his new finisher. Oh, I guess we do know the new finisher, because then he kicks him in the gut and Jelly Roll ducks a punch and hits a sidewalk slam onto Logan Paul. And the crowd goes wild for this.
Yeah, Tessitore called it a black hole boss man slam.
A black hole boss man slam.
So maybe that's what it'll be.
A new, new twist on things. I'll say this, like, the promo was really good and I don't doubt this guy is training really hard for this match. I don't know if I would have done the physicality here, because even in like the 30 seconds here, I can't say I have any curiosity about seeing this guy wrestle or an interest to see him do any more physically. I'm interested to see the match layout, and certainly Jelly Roll has to do some stuff in this match. I would have just left this at the promo, but I guess they felt the need that they had to show off something here with Jelly Roll. But I'm just not like, this is not one where I'm like, man, this is going to be so interesting to see this guy wrestling. Like, I'm just not there when it comes to,
well, you and I aren't the target demo. I don't think you're a Jelly Roll fan unless you are.
I've always said that I have enjoyed Jelly Roll to the contrary way. Anyone that has paid attention, I have like always said I enjoyed this guy. He's a great singer, and I have no issue with the man himself. And I don't doubt that he's taking this ultra seriously.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just not like, am I crazy about seeing him wrestle? Like, if I worked super hard at basketball for like 6 months, no one would want to see me play basketball. Like, nobody. Oh,
I would.
No, you wouldn't.
I think most of the listeners here would be very curious to see you enter the NBA and how to see how you would fare.
Okay, well, that's never going to happen. So, anyway.
I'm not at all a Jelly Roll fan. So, like, in terms of just, like, whether or not I'm translating my sort of appreciation of his music to, like, an interest in seeing him in the ring, that's not really me. But I also don't think, like, what you saw tonight was necessarily indicative of the wrestling match that you're going to see, right? Like, maybe you have some sort of feeling of, like, his mobility and what he's able to do, but I also think, like, a wrestling match will be very different from...
Is he doing a Canadian Destroyer? That's the question.
On Logan Paul? Yeah, Logan Paul can make the jump for it. He's probably not making the flip, but I mean, off the top rope, maybe it's possible. We don't know what he's been working on. The guy could deliver a 450. We have no idea.
Will we see another Black Hole Boss Man Slam?
Yeah, I would suggest that, yeah.
There was a very expensive-looking vignette for Andrade and Rey Fénix. They went all out for this one. On location, wardrobe, budget. Fénix refers to Andrade as La Sombra.
Well, they had nicknames for each other. They said, I know who this guy... So Andrade calls him El Animal.
El Animal, yes.
Yeah.
And La Sombra.
The Animal?
I think we're safe in translating that one.
And the La Sombra, the Shadow. Okay, so they have aliases, in case you didn't know. Aliases for their other aliases.
Go ahead.
No, nothing.
Well, they also explain that they are on a different level. Take that, Will. And it's only a matter of time until we win the titles. We are the standard. We are money. I'm praying that they become La Standard.
La Standard. How about La Money?
Yeah, that would be better. They said that they were money twice in this. But yeah.
I thought this was a very good-looking video, good-looking suits. It's a chance for them to show off their English in this sort of pre-produced setting.
Where were they? This is like a car commercial in the middle of a farm.
Probably somewhere near Cleveland, on the road towards Cleveland. Just with a Maserati that they found parked on the side of the road. Hey, guys, get out. See that car? Let's shoot a video next to it. But I like it. Listen, it makes them feel like a team, and it was at the very least nice to have this 90 minutes before they go for the World Tag Team Championships.
I would have rathered this vignette been like a time-lapse video of them just making small talk in the car on the ride out to this farm. I think that would have been more character. Maybe put that on YouTube. The four-hour uncut version of this trip.
You don't think they would have good small talk for 4 hours?
Maybe. Is it in character or is it just natural?
Well, I'm sure they have plenty to talk about. I mean, do you hear what's going on? do you know what's going on with AAA? Do you hear what's going on, Sable? Do you hear this shit about Rouge?
They sold the Coliseo again.
Yeah.
Roxanne Perez and Alexa Bliss. Charlotte is now leaning into being the cheerleader. She brought out black pom-poms. And Bliss, if people noticed, the announcers did not call attention to this, but she hit like a reverse, like natural selection coming toward her, and then goes for the Sister Abigail, but is stopped with an eye rake. Raquel's getting involved from the floor, so Flair throws her over the barricade. But then as Bliss goes for Twisted Bliss, Raquel attacks Flair. So Bliss turns her attention to Raquel and hits Twisted Bliss to the floor. And this ended up being a twisted landing because Bliss busted open her nose on this fall, comes into the ring, and off the distraction is rolled up by Perez with an O'Connor roll, grabbing the bottom rope and pinning Alexa Bliss. So it is one apiece in their singles matches going into SummerSlam next weekend. And Alexa Bliss, ever the pro, she looks like she went to the back, got like a Kleenex and blew her nose. So she had blood all over her face for the sit down segment backstage to really like, my nose is busted open. I might as well get the mileage I can out of this blood.
Yeah, she's just trying to do the Karrion Kross on Monday. Yeah. Oh, my God.
She didn't lean in and kiss anyone, though, afterwards. That was pretty gross by Kross. But
I didn't find this to be a great match on its own. And I wonder if, like, a lot of the wrestling on the show was just, you know, hampered by
All the matches got adjusted because of the segment, because almost every match, the majority of it took place in the commercial break. So unless you were watching live on Netflix, you missed so much of this. Like of almost every match. Like I say this was 7:21, but really it was take 3.5 minutes off of that because you missed it.
And really the content of it that I think was relevant for television was just all the distractions, right? To lead to build up to the tag team match. And I thought that was fine. You know, the finish is fine to set them one apiece, and also to, I guess, heading into SummerSlam, set Alexa and Charlotte more as the underdogs. So you think they win?
I would put the belts on them. Yes. This tag division needs something. And I think Charlotte and Alexa represent the most kind of, something interesting in this, would you say this tag team, it is gelling, it is working?
I would. Yeah. Judging by online reaction, I think fans are okay, they were incredibly vocal at Evolution. That hasn't necessarily carried across, at least to the SmackDown last week, but online, things have really turned around for Charlotte. Like, it's a very positive reception to her as a part of this team and everything else. So, yeah.
What if I commissioned a follow-up study to see how effective this angle has been when it comes to online reaction to Charlotte?
Yeah. Should we should just ask the same people to do a same, tally of who the most harassed professional wrestlers are and see if Charlotte's still at the very top?
We should ask them.
Yeah, she might still be. But yeah, like, I think they'll win. And yes, I know Raquel and Roxanne have a long-term story with Liv. That's going to be months down the line. They have plenty of time to win the titles back in order to continue
multiple
that
times.
Story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Kelly interviews Jade, and we see the MFTs speaking with the Miz in the background, the returning Miz. So more to come on that. She basically just, I'm wrestling Tiffany Stratton and I'm a natural born champion. She had nothing to say here, but there was another purpose for her being here, because as she leaves, the Secret Hervis walk in. Green complains about being screwed out of the Queen of the Ring and runs down Jade, who has returned behind Chelsea, attacks her and carries her out to the arena for an impromptu match. Impromptu being, again, 3/4 of this match took place in a commercial break. Elba Fire and Niven come out during the break to assist Green. And after Green hits a zigzag, she goes for the unprettier. It's blocked and jaded for the win in 5:12 as Fire and Niven then attack. Stratton runs out to help Jade. They fight off the Secret Hervis, and then we get a tug of war with the women's title as Jade relinquishes control to Tiffany Stratton.
Not much of a match. Honestly, didn't expect it to be here, but just the way to, get us to the main event. And of course, this being a double babyface build, this is where Chelsea Green comes in, just to kind of provide an antagonist for both of them to fight against. I have to say, a week out, this Stratton Jade feud just does not do much for me. They haven't really had time to establish much connection between the two. Certainly not much heat here, between the two of them. I at the very least, I would have expected a very competitive sort of campaign from each of them to be the new face, or at least the continued representation of the new generation in the WWE, and we're not even really getting that. We're not really getting much meat, to this match, in my opinion.
Yes or no, next Friday, go home SmackDown before SummerSlam, do we get the question answered? Can they coexist on the last SmackDown?
I think Secret Hervis versus Stratton versus Jade match feels very likely. Yeah.
Charlotte is with a bloody Alexa Bliss, and Charlotte explains this can't happen at SummerSlam and says, we're partners. And Bliss says, I knew you were about to say friends. And Charlotte says, well, maybe after SummerSlam, maybe after. It's like they're past the flirtation section of the relationship, and now they're SummerSlam's the first date.
Yeah, pretty much. This is like, I mean, if you watch The Office, this is like, you know, Pam and Jim season 4 now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they've confirmed the relationship. They're just not maybe completely together. They're not married yet.
If this was all actual, the towel, sheesh, there's a lot of blood.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of blood from nosebleeds.
Okay. They showed a handful of Hogan segments, like him winning the title in 84, WrestleMania 3. It kind of felt like just, random.
It was chronological, was it not?
It was just like two of them. You know what I mean? Like it was kind of like an odd number of like, I we're just going to pick out two highlights of his career for the rest of the hour and 45 minutes after the tribute.
This is where I would also wonder if it was a timing issue that they may have had more that they decided to cut out because it was shortened time.
Well, it was, it kind of did feel like that show that there was, you know, but like they had to dedicate 15 minutes to the Hogan stuff and then figuring out the rest.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Cody comes out to start the second hour and at first reflects on Hogan, acknowledging that feelings are complicated, but he puts over the career accomplishments of Hulk Hogan and thanks him as a fellow superstar. And
yeah,
I don't feel that there's going to be a promo since 2021, the famous one, that is going to be as discussed than Cody's choice of words here.
Well, again, like,
what
would any of us have said in that situation where you're supposed to be the representative of the company? And again, like, I don't know what Cody's true feelings are, you know, about Hulk Hogan. But what would any of us have said in the situation?
No one's in a great situation here. Okay. It is what it is. Like that's it.
His other option would have been to say nothing and to have just thanked Hulk Hogan. Now, and that would have,
or he says nothing. Like, that's the other option. He just does his promo.
And if he says nothing, that would have gotten him an avalanche of, you know, response.
No, it wouldn't have.
Yes, I think so.
There were plenty of people on the show who said nothing.
Yeah,
who else besides Cody said anything on this show? Like,
okay, but maybe...
It was like the 15 minutes was the tribute. Cody was out there.
Yeah, I guess maybe like he feeling more like a locker room representative and a leader and a face of the company. I feel like there might be a bit more... And a baby face, you know, at that, like, I think there'd be a little bit more pressure for him to say it. Maybe he just truly took it upon himself because these are his real feelings, right? I feel like the word, again, like we joke about this, but like the word complicated is maybe about as much as I would expect from like somebody who's essentially a figurehead for the WWE right now.
Yeah. I'm presenting my own just aversion, because I just feel like that word, and I'm totally biased because I've just been surrounded by this the last 2 days. It just feels like it's a word that we put in there to avoid any complicated breakdown of something. And I'm not saying this is the platform for such a discussion, but it just feels like everything is like the complicated legacy. Oh, it was complicated. Complicated.
I'm not sure if you're aware, John, but there aren't many places for us to have deep discussion publicly these days. Everything is about getting a message out in as short amount of time and as few characters as possible.
Are you familiar with Wheatley Vodka's, So what do you want to talk about podcast?
I actually listen to
it. I expect this on the next show that Cody is going to have
that
conversation.
That would absolutely be
what I want him to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. I hope he does. Something tells me he might not get into it there either, because I don't know if it's known for being a place of controversial discussion. I did listen to the Nikki Bella podcast, which I actually quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
With Cody, but I don't expect them to... Maybe, I don't know, who knows, maybe in time, but
maybe the Bellas podcast will cover this next week.
If they do, I wonder. I don't think so. Yeah.
So then he transitions to the street fight with John Cena that he promises to be violent. And what he is basically saying, what they're doing, it feels like, is the invasion buildup with Steve Austin. I want the old John Cena, which ended up being a hell of a 6-day turnaround for Austin that I maintain was a big reason why that buy rate did so well for that invasion pay-per-view, because they did an amazing one episode turnaround of Austin on the go home episode heading into invasion. And it is kind of setting this up for next week, a promo segment with Cena and Cody trying to bring Cena back from his evil ways. We want the old John Cena for SummerSlam. He said, if it's your last SummerSlam, treat it like it's your first. If it's your last G1 Tanahashi, treat it like your first. And he said, I want all the hustle, loyalty, and we can beat the respect out of each other. He needs to know that your story is not just fantasy, that it meant something, that it was real. And the only one with the answer is you, John. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, so clearly setting up something, some sort of like,
it's complicated.
I don't know, tease of turning. Now, do you think this was like, do you think we'll get a John Cena babyface turn at SummerSlam? And was the intent of this promo to lead us to think that might?
Oh, I think it's definitely putting into motion the idea of, like, ultimately this guy has to become a babyface. The question is when and how you do it. Is it just a 180 that you do, or is it a prolonged change that peaks for the end? But I think absolutely this is the intent. It is to get that in mind, that we're trying to get the motion of this Cena turn happening. And I think that was the goal there.
Sure. Yeah. I don't expect it. I
don't see him showing up on SmackDown saying, you know what, you're right. Bad call. This has not been working. I'm just shifting back. But it's supposed to plant the seed for something that harvests at a later date.
Does the match feel hot to you, like for a SummerSlam main event?
I think that I thought this promo actually was very good in that regard. I think both guys are very keenly aware of how poorly received their last match was, that hopefully that's enough of like a chip on each of their shoulders to kind of get that one erased from people's memory and replace it with something much better. I can't say like I'm expecting like a miracle in this match either. I think the limitations of John Cena are very real. And it was interesting. They actually aired another Unreal clip that was way more interesting than the one they aired on Monday. And it was sort of talking about, it's obviously from the episode about the Cena turn and discussing like this retirement tour and the fact that Cena's like physically limited and you have to adjust to that. Like, this is not 10 years ago anymore. We can't present that John Cena anymore. So I thought that part was interesting. Like that is the reality that they are contending with. This is a John Cena that is, you know, has gone through a lot of injuries and his body is what it is at this point as he's closing in on 50. So I would say overall, like it feels like a significant match. But I don't think it has the hype maybe necessarily of like your peak level going into Mania.
Yeah. I don't sense it myself either. And part of it is because it's SummerSlam and it's not WrestleMania. I think part of it is because the last one was so poorly received. I think also a big part of it is the fact that they really didn't have that much time and too many appearances to really like make this one feel as big. And you know, you have one interaction, you have that contract segment between the two of them, and then you have a face-to-face next week right before the event. So we'll see what they can do in a week's time. But it doesn't necessarily feel like it's one where I can say I'm like anticipating it as much as a Mania main event.
Jacob Fatu cuts a promo. He loved Solo, but you tried to send me to jail last week, a place I'm never going back to. But I don't mind being locked in a cage for the U.S. title. I'm going to dog walk your ass. So The Miz, representing Cleveland, walks in, confronts him about Jacob Fatu taking him out in the past. Look at the Undertaker impression here.
I don't make these screen caps. I just find them on Twitter.
You could take credit for this. You absolutely could.
Okay.
So The Miz is not a pawn. He is the main character, and you've messed with the wrong guy on the wrong night in my hometown. And then The Miz slaps Jacob Fatu. I mean, this was, I'm glad The Miz is like positioned here as a heel, because he could not have looked like a bigger geek here with Jacob Fatu.
I don't know if he was positioned as a heel at all. He got a slap.
He was aligned with the MFTs. Like, yeah, by the end of this whole thing.
But he was cheered by Cleveland, and he was just all like, I'm representing, like, he was all Mr. Cleveland here, and gave a big slap to Jacob Fatu. I thought it was an odd pairing, to be honest, because I think this crowd actually loved The Miz.
Maybe, but by the end of this, he felt like someone from Cleveland that was going to be sent off to go do like a comedy show an hour later. That's how he felt. Like another Cleveland
Johnny
native.
Gargano, right? Well, he won't have to worry about that on next Saturday.
Imagine he was booked for a late night, and the late show, and they didn't tell him it was canceled, and he goes to right there after SummerSlam.
Mm. Some people might be making that mistake.
I think that'd be hilarious. People showed up, and there's no late show. Mm. Aleister Black promo on Damian Priest. He is now the debt that he is going to collect. Priest is nothing like Aleister Black, and they are going to have a match next week, and Damian Priest is bringing these hands to punish him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't want Damian Priest. I'm bringing Punishment Martinez to Newark next week.
I want the real Damian Priest to show up, okay?
I don't want Aleister Black next week. I'm calling out Tommy End. There we go. Martinez End next week.
Yeah. So this is all really, really at the very least right now seeming like it's amounting. Well, it is amounting to a TV match, essentially, on like the go home episode before SummerSlam.
Yeah. And that's fine. Cross and Zayn get the last slot at SummerSlam.
You only have 12 matches across the two weekends. Okay. And sometimes things just don't make the cut. And this is one of them. But it's more than I could say for R-Truth, Ron Killings, who is still MIA.
What are you talking about?
What's he doing lately?
It's going to be huge. Okay. He's going to host WWE Late Show.
Oh, okay. Yes. He got that like fluky win over Cena. I guess he beat Aleister Black. Did he beat Cena, or did he lose to Cena?
No, he didn't beat him. It was, the first time Cena just ran through him.
Yeah.
And then they had the rematch.
The rematch.
And how did that end?
Oh God, we are just one thing, and it's like so easy to just forget. Here, I'll get it here because I know people are shouting at me. R-Truth beat John Cena by DQ, okay, and then you had R-Truth beat Aleister Black, via sort of distraction, but he did beat him in 2 minutes. So he's coming off of a defeat of John Cena, yes, by DQ, but John Cena nonetheless, also defeating Aleister Black, and he's nowhere to be found.
It's a slow build, okay? You got to have patience. Let it play out, Way.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
The hometown star, The Miz versus Jacob Fatu. There's a distraction that leads to Miz sending Fatu into the post. The MFTs come down, and they pull Miz out of the way after a hip attack, and Fatu lands a suicide dive. He fights off all the MFTs, gets into the ring, boom, pop up Samoan, and pins The Miz in 6:57. He just ran through this guy. And the MFTs attack. Jimmy Uso runs out with a chair to assist Fatu, nails Tala in the back, but he won't go down, and Jimmy gets beaten down and taken out with a big boot. 4-on-1 against Fatu, but Jacob Fatu gets to his feet. He super kicks his way free, hip attack on Solo, and then puts the chair around Solo's neck, goes for the hip attack, but Tala is back and cuts him off, choke slam, and then the Samoan spike is delivered as Solo yells, "All gas, no brakes."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should have yelled, "No gas, all brakes."
Fine. I would say expected build to this match. They continue to promote Tala as a very big difference maker. So I guess I'm expecting him to be involved in the steel cage match where theoretically nobody should be able to get in. But it's kind of all I have to say about this. I mean, the cage I think will be a spectacle, but beyond that, it's one of the matches at SummerSlam.
Correct. In a cage. Kathy Kelly interviews the Street Profits and B-Fab and they've got to handle the Wyatts differently. And they're upset they weren't even in the qualifier last week. DIY come in. They offer to fix the mess that the Street Profits have created. And they make fun of DIY for their miscommunication spot last week. And DIY warns the Street Profits to stay out of our way. They would not. Spoiler. Zelina Vega confronts Julia. And now Julia has representation. Something that pro wrestlers are not used to. Kiana James, the returning Kiana James, who's been gone for over a year, is back to represent Julia. And Vega refers to her as a clipboard Karen and states that no one has had the balls to step up to Julia, which is a choice of words. And James has already spoken to Nick Aldis, and Zelina Vega will get her chance at Julia next week. So Vega warns her not to get comfortable. So Kiana James is like, can see the future here. She knew all of this was going to happen.
I guess there aren't many people that are even actively talking to Julia in the back, right? So I guess Kiana James recognized she's likely the person to get the match. I like the pairing here of Kiana James with Julia. I think James can, you know... She seemed very capable here of handling, like, I guess, you know, the dialogue. It allows Julia to be maybe involved deeper in the feuds that she's engaged in. Julia is still now getting her, like, big lines in at the end. She's still sounding cool. The aura is still maintained. In fact, it might even be a little bit bigger with essentially a manager next to her. So I think it's a good way to reintroduce Kiana James. Honestly, like, I wondered if she would ever come back because it's not like she... It's hard for me to see like a fit for somebody who I guess is like an okay wrestler, but certainly not anybody who's notable. And the standard is so high right now. But as a manager next to Julia, I think it's a good fit. So we'll see, we'll watch this on the go home show tomorrow next week.
Or they could send them out to the farm for a vignette, and we also get the dash cam footage of their conversation.
Yes, that too. Yeah,
what that would be. So there you have it. Julia James.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know what you did last summer.
Huh?
The lead character is Julie James.
Oh, okay.
That's
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
Never saw it.
Any of them?
No.
Oh.
Oh, I can't believe you haven't seen it.
No, you never saw.
Never.
I saw the first two in the theater, and I went this week and saw the latest one, and
What? There's a new one?
Oh, yeah. They just did the latest one. It just came out last weekend.
Okay.
That's why it's on the top of my mind.
You recommend?
It's a stupid movie, but me and my friends laughed uproariously throughout this movie. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
I recommend. This is the 1997 one that Wei has pulled up. But yes, there's I Know What You Did Last Summer. I still know what you did last summer. There was some straight to DVD release that I believe included Zombies in 2006. Never saw that one. And now we're back to I Know What You Did Last Summer with a big end post credit scene. So be aware if you go to see this.
Is this like a sort of a like is it the same universe? Is there a shared universe between the I Know What You Did Last Summers?
Not the third. The third one has no ownership. It's the detached one. It has nothing to do with anything. But yeah, the theatrical releases are all
intertwined. So Jennifer Love Hewitt shows up in the post credits. So
no, she's the main character in this latest one.
Oh, she is.
Yes. Yeah. No, she's featured very prominently.
Jennifer Love Hewitt herself or her character?
Well, who do you think's playing her character? Jennifer Love Hewitt is.
She's back. But she's not on the poster here.
Is she not? Well, she's a primary character.
Oh, she is. She's in the background. Though,
yeah, yeah. That's
right. Oh, okay. So the old generation are now like the dads and the moms in the new one.
They're not dads and moms, but yeah, they are the older generation. And wouldn't you know it that all these years later, another group of kids are responsible for an accidental murder.
Oh, man. It's funny how, you know.
It's crazy. In
like
the same
father,
city,
like
too,
son.
On the same 4th of July holiday, too. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, main event, Joe Gacy, Dexter Lumis against Andrade and Rey Fénix. This was a great commercial break main event. We come back, and I can't say this really got going all that much, especially for a Fénix-Andrade match, but Fénix makes the big tag to Andrade. Andrade lands the spinning elbow. Fénix does a dive over the two of them, and then as Andrade is going for the message, it turns out Nikki Cross got the message first because she yanks Daphne LaShawn out of the ring. And something incredible happened. The bell rung for this spot. And we have now created a new precedent in WWE canon that when we do the ripping the referee out of the ring spot for a near fall, that is a disqualification. So I don't want to hear any more when I'll complain about this lack of logic for the future.
Well, hold on a second. If you're an active participant in the match, you could do it. And it's not a DQ.
So if you're not a participant in the match, you can rip the referee out to save your
partner. No. If you're like one of the four wrestlers here, you could do that, and it's not a DQ.
Why?
Because you're just involved in the wrestling match, right? It's fair game.
What if Nikki Cross had slid a chair into the ring? Would that be grounds for a disqualification?
No, because she just put an object there. It doesn't mean she didn't hit anybody with it. If she threw the chair in and somehow the chair hit somebody in the head, leading to, an opponent in the head, then yeah, that should be a DQ.
So what if you and I are in a tag match and you're in trouble and I punch the referee in the face? I'm in the match and I'm stopping the count
if you're
punching them in the face.
Okay, so did the referee see it is my first question.
They probably saw the fist right before it jarred their face off.
Once they come to, do they remember that you hit him?
I don't think I'd knock them unconscious. I think this would just be,
enough
to stop a count.
Light peppering shot. They saw you do it. You are the culprit.
Yeah.
Then I think we would be DQ'd.
That's fine, right?
No.
I'd be DQ'd for physically getting involved with the referee.
So that was
to break
a punch. That was a punch. Like we're talking about the action of pulling a ref out of the ring so that they can no longer continue their cover.
Okay, think about this. Okay,
pin.
Be serious. Would you rather take a punch from someone in the face, or would you rather like be ripped out of the ring and dropped those 2 feet and have the wind knocked out at you? I think I'd take the punch, to be quite honest.
Maybe from you, maybe the punch.
Ooh, ouch, way. That one's
no. But one is an active, assaulting move, okay?
They're both assault.
Yeah, but the other is more of a, hey, I'm just going to move your position. One here.
No, you're ripping someone off a platform and dropping unexpectedly and probably can't even cushion and get your hands
up the
block.
It's more like one of those, hey, I'm going to move you over here. If you happen to fall and hurt yourself, that's kind of on you, not on me. It's more like one of those, I think.
Well, it ends in a DQ. So the tag division empties. Nick Aldis has had enough. If you are hell-bent on destroying each other, and we've only got 5 matches on night 2, well, you can have a TLC match, for Christ's sake. And that is how it ends, and they brawled some more. So we will get our five team?
We got Fraxium, DIY, Profit, and the Wyatts, and Andrade, and
Fénix. That's 5.
5. And Motor City?
Yes, they are in there too.
Okay, so
I think that's
TLC.
5 teams. A lot of people.
Yeah. Last time it was 4?
It was 4 on the SmackDown episode in April.
Don't shout at us, everybody. All right? We don't care. It's fine. Yes, all the teams are going to be there. And great. I saw a lot of early sort of disappointment that, how come this show that I bought tickets to is only 5 matches and not six matches like the other show. Well, you got your six match, everybody. You were going to get your six match.
There's
all
only
along.
Like three episodes left. How could they possibly add another match in that time period?
But yeah, it's a big one. It's a really nice one. The last one was, I think, you know, to many, maybe one of the best matches of the year on TV. So to now get the stage that they will, TLC in a big stadium, I think it'll be awesome. What a great showcase for these guys. I'll say I am pretty disappointed, though, that like the Wyatts now are just like these straight up heels who resort to getting disqualified to protect their championships like that. First of all, I guess I never really saw the heel turn. Like, they were baby faces all throughout their Raw run, and then now they come back to SmackDown, and all of a sudden they're just, like, these cheating heels. I don't love the fact that they are... Yes, I know they're portrayed as these dominant threats, but they are portrayed as dominant because they are so devastating, not because they cheat. So now they're essentially just, like, cowardly heels, and I don't really love that for them. But anyway, in a TLC, maybe that won't matter so much.
Well, there you go. We have one more Raw, one more SmackDown until SummerSlam, and... got the full card at this point between the two nights. So that solidifies all of that. Overall, it was like kind of I won't call it a weird edition of SmackDown, but they were trying to do a lot of things on the SmackDown, and they had to do, you know, I think they had to do a lot more than just, you know, graphic off the top, video during the show for someone of the level of Hogan, and they obviously felt that as well. Did you feel it was, for people tuning in, like a sizable tribute in terms of like this will probably, I'm almost confident this will be the most watched SmackDown of the year because of the circumstances?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how anybody could really, like, I guess it depends on your expectation. I'm sure there were some people that that might have been even disappointed by what they got here. Maybe people are disappointed that they got this at all. And
do they do this on Raw as well? Do they do something?
Oh, the salute and the tribute? God.
Because we have seen that before where they have done it on the multiple shows and such. And I am curious if they...
Because of the different locker room. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could definitely see it. I mean, for one thing, I think it'd be great for the ratings to do it. Not to be so maybe insensitive about it, but...
I'm sure Hogan would understand.
Yeah. Do you... Okay. I guess in discussing all of this, how do you think they would comparatively treat a Vince McMahon death like on these shows?
It would be really complicated. No, to be quite honest, I think it would get this treatment.
Of course. Yeah. I definitely think so too. I guess it's more dependent on like what the public conversation surrounding Vince would be as well.
I think it would be Hogan times 10.
Yeah,
maybe that, not that as much. I'll preface it by stating this. I think the average fan was more aware of the Hogan stuff than maybe they know Vince McMahon has done some, is accused of some awful things. But I think with Hogan, there was a tape, you know what I mean? And there's just that much more, it's much more tangible because you're seeing it and you're hearing it. And with Vince, it's in a lawsuit. It's, you know, it's very graphic. But regardless, I mean, we're just getting into semantics. But this is like, I would think it would be just as big as this, if not even larger.
Yeah, I would think so too.
You know, at that point, it would just be, it would be one that would receive just as much, I think, in terms of like polarizing opinions toward, and maybe even more. Because, you know, that's a very difficult one to navigate, but WWE would have to do, you know, similar if not bigger than this.
Again, it's like I feel like I would expect it from the WWE, of course, because their DNA is entirely tied to these figures. So I think I would suggest there's an obvious expectation to celebrate like what you might still consider to be the patriarch of, you know, your family, right?
Anyway. Even though they don't acknowledge him today.
Well, that's different, I suppose. And why is it different? Because the public feels differently about the figures upon their death.
There's a very real...
and because they can't embarrass you anymore.
Yeah, there's some of that. And it's, but to get to your point, like, that is what I would expect at that point. Well, there you go, everybody. It's been Hulk Hogan overload the last couple of days. We're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel, but we are going to take feedback on the forum. And if anyone has Hogan questions, we'll take them there. And just to give everyone a heads up that today, Wei Ting did a G1 show with Eric Marcotte. That is up at postwrestlingcafe.com. Our G1 coverage is ongoing. Another show will be dropping Sunday with WH Park and Karen Peterson. Saturday night, Kate from Montreal is joined by Nate Milton to discuss a Collision Course and probably more Hogan discussion as well that will be on many of our shows in the coming days. And then Wei Ting and I are back on Monday for Rewind to Raw. And the final note, because a lot of stuff was just thrown into chaos the last few days, our Rewind Away on the best of the WWF Volume 16, it is, we are postponing it until a week from Thursday.
August 7th.
That's when the next Rewind Away was supposed to be done. Instead of just like forcing this into everyone's feed, quite frankly, with me traveling, it's going to be nearly impossible to record this.
And with the G1 and with, I think what the news cycle currently is, we just don't expect much. The show would have probably gotten lost anyway. So
So I think everyone understands that it's a unusual set of circumstances this week, but that Rewind Away will be covered. We will be talking about Gene Okerlund's trip to Japan from the mid-80s. All right. Goodbye, YouTube. And now we head to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.